Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life. The Meditation Museum in Silver Spring, Maryland offers a variety of courses and activities to make your life go a whole lot smoother. Located at 9525 Georgia Avenue, you will be able to experience the beautiful silence that's in the space. There are courses in Raj Yoga meditation, positive thinking, stress-free living, and personal development classes. For more information, call us at 301-588-0144 or visit us online at meditationmuseum.org.
He went without food, not to lose weight, but to help people lose generations of hate. While many around him rose up with violence, he sat down for peace. When others used religion as an excuse for war, he used it to remind them of love. Mahatma Gandhi made the world a far better place by reaching out with the strength he cultivated within his soul. Soul, pass it on. From the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. That was our wonderful friend, Gary Wright. Remember that one? Classic.
Dreamweaver. I don't know why I always go back to being like 12, 13 in these bell-bottom pants and just doing my thing. But I tell you, these songs bring back such memories for me, my days of innocence, when I had no idea that decades later I would have lived the life that I've lived today and listened to the news that I'm listening to today. It's just like you can't ever predict what your tomorrow will be. All you've got is today. You could dream about tomorrow, but still, it's so deeply left up to what's preordained in our script or in our destiny. And I believe that many of us are doing the best that we can to bring our stories forward. I don't think we really intend very deeply, deeply at the core of the soul, that we intend to give sorrow to anyone. But it seems to come out. Some of us just have a narrative to be on the other side of the spectrum. And I'll tell you this, everyone, if you're in DC right now, the energy is so thick. I'm getting text messages, phone calls. I mean, I have to tell you, some of the most unique conversations are coming to me. I had a call from the son of a 5-star general who was just like having visions, revelations of things, and is wondering, in the next few months, America's going to go through this, America's going to go through that. And I'm like, okay, but are you strong enough inside? Don't worry about what's going to happen. Nobody knows anything for sure. The only thing we know for sure is the way we need to think and feel, if it's connected to our divinity, our peace, our power, our worth, because I have no control over the next second in my life. I'm asking you to really come back to this place because, again, everyone, I'm in the fire here, and I love it. Please know I'm not complaining. And it fascinates me when I do hear these calls come in with fear or anxiety or gloom, because I know that's a signal that we are being called to go a little higher, we're being called to go a little deeper, and we're being called to realize that we have the power to think in a particular way that doesn't feed the vibrations that we're receiving in the world at this time. My heart really goes out to our current administration and the vibration in which those folks are operating from. It can't be healthy for the soul. It can't be healthy for the cells in your body. It certainly isn't healthy for the nation. And for whatever is the deep significance behind why we're witnessing what we're witnessing, I think we're all being signaled to get closer to the soul's worth and value, to elevate our thinking, to connect more to a higher power, and to begin to really move away from any sort of an interior division or interior discomfort with your own company. This is my request for all of my friends who'd especially tune into the show. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We're our wonderful Michelle Gillen, and I was just with Michelle about 2 weeks ago in Miami, and this is someone that you want to know more about and the work that she's doing. And I was chuckling with her around the woman's table, which we'll talk about later, but I was telling her, I'm so glad you've retired in a way from journalism, even though she hasn't. She's really getting ready for her next wind. But because of the energy that's out there in the world of journalism, my heart also goes out to those that are in this field, because the intensity of the stress factor is huge. It's huge. And I'm telling you, we have to send good wishes and pure feelings to our brothers and sisters there. So as I speak of this, I would like us to go into a little bit of meditation before I get Michelle on the air. Take a deep breath and let us let go of all the stuff that's happening and really elevate our own consciousness to a place in which our presence can actually do service. Take a deep breath. Here's letting go. From off the grid into the heart. Om Shanti. The time that we choose to be aware doesn't necessarily require me to just sit and meditate. But even while I walk and move around, I can be in a meditative awareness, which is awareness of the soul, the original, eternal, imperishable being of light. For a little while, I'd like to invite you to be present, to be here, and to be now. Allow your mind to settle in the moment, to relax. This meditation is about awareness. It's about becoming aware of your original and eternal self. It's about connecting to your truth. Let go of your name. And observe yourself feeling nameless. Let go of your gender to discontinue thinking you're a man or a woman. Let it go and observe how you would feel walking around without a gender. Let go of the role that you play and let go of the titles that you own. Observe how you're feeling as you are gradually letting go. Let go of your religion and put it aside just for now. And let go of your nationality and even the language that you're accustomed to. Imagine you have no name, gender, role, title, religion, nationality, or even a language. Ask yourself, how do you feel at this moment? And in this feeling, who would think of you and who would you think of? The Supreme Soul would think of you, and you, the liberated soul, would think of the Supreme. In this state of absolute freedom, I am truly who I am. A free, peaceful, pure, immortal, and eternal soul. Allow yourself to just be absorbed in this awareness. This time,
hmm.
Welcome back, everyone. That was Letting Go from the Off the Grid Into the Heart Meditation CD, my favorite track on the whole album. And speaking of albums, today I got the good news that our album is complete. Our Inclusion Revolution new meditation groove will be released soon, so we've actually finally mastered and finished all the tracks. So we're so happy about that, so stay tuned about that. I hope you've enjoyed this meditation, because we're about to get an inspiring individual on the air right now. Michelle Gillen is an independent investigative reporter and filmmaker. Following more than 2 decades with the CBS station in Miami and more than 3 decades in television news, Michelle has been awarded, get this, 38 regional television Emmys for work. Can you believe that? 38 regional television Emmys for work, largely illuminating issues that are hard to bring to the screen, such as inmate suffering from mental illness in our jails, which is huge, child exploitation, elder abuse, the trafficking of women, and the tears in the system that allow the vulnerable to be forgotten or silenced. Michelle is presently involved in producing her first long-form documentary, which involves a hidden chapter in the Holocaust. And one of her great passions is a project where we most recently met called The Woman's Table, which Michelle will tell us a lot about. Today, we are honored to welcome my dear friend, Michelle Gillen, all the way from sunny Miami. Welcome to the show.
Om Shanti, sister. It's such a pleasure. And, you know, you've invited us in. I at first felt like I was entering the world there on a magic carpet ride. You mentioned your wonderful music and brought the images back of your youth with bell bottoms. I must mention that you're opening the show with the most beautiful Lucinda from Bliss and playing 100,000 Angels. That is my daily meditation music. So I felt so connected when you did that.
Oh, thank you, my sweet one. My aim is to have the show really make us feel better by the time we're done listening to it. And I know before we go into our beautiful conversation, I have to congratulate you, because you're such an inspiration. Everyone, I don't want you all to think Michelle is really in her senior years, nor do I want you to think that I'm too much in my senior years. But everyone, while growing up in Miami, I remembered watching Michelle on the news regularly. And I was a teenager in those days. And so I think from my heart, I just wanted to congratulate you for your many, many years of service in investigative journalism. It has changed and impacted so many lives. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. It has really been an honored path. And as you said, I mean, I began here in Miami. Really, I walked in 1980 and walked right into the riots of the time. And my generation of journalists, and there's so many out there, but we really did, as you said, walk into the fire. And we worked in newsrooms and companies with management that taught us, that trained us. And we lived with such an obligation of reporting to our community every night. And there was that contact with our community. And we would never want to let anyone down in that. And I'm privileged to have come up through a time that, for those of us, we see as such a sterling time. And it is so interesting as far as destiny goes at this particular time. I'm on pause from daily news when you know, every eye is on the White House and our policies. It's an interesting juxtaposition. But as media has changed, as you so well know and have spoken about, I think that it's the call of time. And I believe so much in the power of news, the power of video, which in my career is what's really made the difference. I mean, from capturing the mentally ill on the forgotten floor, it was the video showing the inhumane situation and conditions that lives on, and that can make such a difference. And so I believe so much in investigative reporting and journalism, and my hat is off to those working journalists, especially covering politics today. I have great respect for them, and it is a very tumultuous time for a relationship between the public and the media.
Amen to that. And again, I have to say, these times are waking up everyone. It's not just a particular group of individuals. And it's safe to say that there are times that journalists really kind of strayed away from the authenticity of their stories for the sake of keeping people glued to their channels. And now I'm really appreciating the kind of journalism that I'm seeing, because people are really having to stay on top of the game. Now, I get confused, and I'm asking you to clarify this for me.
Sure.
Because on one level, you've got certain individuals saying there's fake news, media's fake news, right? And then those same people are watching the news to find out what's going on, what are they doing, what do they know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So what do you believe? Do you believe these leaders who are saying it's fake news whilst you know at the same time they have their televisions on to find out who's just broken the latest story, what's going on for them to be able to stay on top of their game?
In my opinion, it is a game in theater, and I mean, the majority of journalists, no one is in this to ever put forward fake news. Do we make mistakes sometimes? Yes. But I mean, at the core, I always think of the real journalists, those that put their lives on the line, who are in Syrian parts of the world, those who have lost their lives. For me, in stepping back and looking at it more as an observer, because I'm not covering the White House and this political rhetoric, there's part of me that would like to, of course, but again, I look at the destiny of being an observer now and working my journalism in an area that I hope will make a difference. So we say we take one bite at the apple, and that's our responsibility. But I think this whole throwing around of fake news, you know, I believe that that is just to obfuscate what's happening. Do I think that sometimes fake news has been dropped into this aquarium of news, but more on purpose by political forces? Yes. But as far as dismissing real issues and using that, it's just a lot of fodder and headlines and titillating for our time. And the news cycle is so different, as you know. I mean, now it's a continual thing. And I think that also affects all of us. People feel like they can't keep up with what's happening. And I think where you come in and you help us with these great tools to stay centered in our heart, in our path, in our ability to make change, is to not get distracted with all of the confusion around us, because there are so many problems to tackle. If you are an investigative journalist, there's so much to do. We really can't afford to be distracted. And I look at it as always burrowing in on one issue or two issues or three issues, and let's keep plodding through it. We have so many social systems that are broken in front of us. So many people need help. And so I just really try not to get distracted with the larger thing. If I'm put on assignment someday to do that, I'll be digging in there. But in the meantime, there are issues like human trafficking and mental illness and the power
which
of the brain
and
all these other things.
Now, just in closure, like, is there such a thing as mindful journalism? Just to give you an idea, we're here for 20 years. We've gotten good coverage in D.C. I'm not disputing that. However, at the same token, I've seen that there's so much good happening in the world, and yet sometimes the stations just don't cover as much the good news. That's one. The second thing is, can there be a mindful journalist, especially in these times?
I think absolutely. And I think that when we see pieces and reporting on the air and stories that touch our heart and inspire us, I think that's mindful journalism. And even if it's journalism into looking at the dark side and difficulties, if it's done properly with fairness, let the audience judge, but we're there to bring a mirror to the truth. And I think that is mindful journalism, because it is hard to get there. What happens, though, is really mindful journalism does take time. It is a commitment. It means checking all aspects of the story. And unfortunately, so many of the newsrooms do run on, we need it tonight. And then even
adrenaline,
if you do a very powerful thing and you say, wow, something great came from it, let's focus on this. For example, with the tragedy we've had here and around the country of firefighters linked to cancer and their job. And we did a lot of work on that. And that was credited for having millions of dollars released so that there could be research. But you would find that when you'd go back to say, let's let the public know something good's happening, something's good so the families of those who died would feel good about them sharing the story, often there's like, we did that, let's move on. And that's what we can't do. Mindful journalism is not moving on. It is keeping that cord of pearls, because we're all in evolution. And the ups and downs of it, the audience wants to know about that, and they're part of it. So I see mindfulness is in really staying on stories and not letting go. I first began human trafficking, you know, I think it was a decade ago, and remember the calls from people that just so inspired me overseas saying you need to look at it, and then finding out it was on domestic soil, and then having a wonderful person like Oprah, who always was ahead of everyone and pioneering and saying, let's look at this domestically. And it was a great honor for me to have my original reports on that there. Well, here we are years later, and I've not stopped, and you just have to keep pulling back the onion. And every new survivor I meet, I look in their eyes, and it's like beginning the fight all over again. And I think that's mm-hmm. mindfulness, that to the very last breath, you don't give up on these stories.
I love that.
I feel like I was born to do this, and you know what? I want to go out.
You were born in your Pisces. You can't help yourself.
Yes,
you just have that
heart
of compassion. Folks, you've tuned into America Meditating Radio, and I'm having a really inspiring conversation with award-winning 38, I can't believe that when I hear that number, I'm like, some people are not even 38. 38 regional television Emmys, the wonderful Michelle Gillen. And we're having a heart-to-heart about life and about journalism. And right now, you've just tuned into where we're talking about her work that she's done decades ago on human trafficking. And about, was it 2 weeks ago or so, we were in Miami together, and I actually came to hear about Michelle's new venture called The Woman's Table on Facebook when I said, oh, I like that. I'd love to be a part of that. And I ended up in Miami, and we ended up doing a gathering at a wonderful restaurant in Miami called, I think, M's Kitchen.
MC Kitchen. It's wonderful.
MC Kitchen. It's
beautiful.
Energy there. I love that
the
vibe
loving.
There. Yeah.
Yes.
And at the woman's table were about, remember, there was a wonderful young lady. Her name was Litasia, and Litasia was one of the individuals who was really pulling her life up, and Michelle's working with her to get her out of the system. And we're about to talk about a movie that Michelle is behind called Trapped, to just play a little promo on Trapped, just for our listeners to get an idea about it, and then we can talk more about this important issue together.
As Massey delivers a little girl to the world, she is haunted by her past. There were the beatings to her skull, arms, and legs, and the forced injections of heroin by the men she describes as her captors.
Well, the pimps, you know, they would shoot us up. We didn't, I mean, we had to sit there and take it. If we try to reject it, you know, we just get beat up.
The liquid poisons rendering her helpless to nothing more than
a doll. A rag doll, voodoo doll, just somebody constantly pricking you, making you do this and that, and not, you know. That's just the whole point. You don't have no control, no say-so over anything.
Wow, I could just feel those words over the air.
I know,
Michelle,
and you
tell us about Trapped. Tell us.
Yes, Trapped, and what you just heard there is a little section of a young woman that we have been following for several years named Kyla. And I have to tell you that every day, you know, she is in such a struggle. The word Trapped came about because I was so fortunate to meet a woman who you met at the woman's table, Ramona Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an advocate who fights to the last moment. You know, at the end of the day, it's all about dignity and non-judgment. And she goes into what she calls, and I've learned about the trenches, and that's what we call Trapped from the Trenches. When I first interviewed her, how would you describe what these young women, these are American citizens, these are girls who grew up in Florida, and so many of them, what we have found is that they are from the foster care system. So here they were raised, they left really traumatic situations with their families. One woman was in dozens and dozens of foster care homes just growing up. Through this, I remember saying to her, how would you describe them? And, you know, she said, well, they're beautified zombies, and that always struck my heart. But then at the end of the day, she says, they're trapped. They're trapped. And we've thought of the word trapped so much because even when they escape, as in this one, many of their cases, sadly, because so often, as you heard the young woman say, that the traffickers shoot them with needles day after day.
Yeah, they were like rag dolls,
That's right, yeah. And so even when they physically, they're trapped because they leave with the burden, the real horror of being a drug addict. And this, with the lack on top of everything of services in our state and around the country, the opioid horror, this is what these young women are going through. And so literally I get calls day and night with Ramona going back in, you know, the last words of that young woman in this chapter of our film is saying, I hope I can do better and that my baby will not go into the system. And we teeter every day, Sister Jenna, on not knowing if the baby's going to go in the system because the mom just can't get the help she needs. But on the positive side of it, this young woman still shared her story with us. because she said, if someone can learn from me. And then that led us to Dietasia, who grew up largely in foster care systems. She just turned 18, emancipated. She had never had a birthday cake or party. And that's what we shared that amazing day with
you
here.
Yeah, it was lovely. Yeah.
It was amazing. That, and she got what I cared about, and part of why we keep it at 12, but I'm going to convince you to come down here very soon. We're going to have a big woman's table because everyone deserves to feel the energy and what you taught us that day. But as you saw, Dietasia, we were all there to affect her heart and say, we are cheering for you. And that's really where the notion of the women's table, which is both literal and figurative, came from, in that I work with and have so many dear friends who work so hard or trying to make change, but often with our own egos, with our own titles, with our own shame. If we're going through difficult things even in our own world, we don't share them because we keep it to ourselves. And it can be very difficult. And I felt that this is a great place for everyone who is working on their own empowerment and other women's empowerment to have a safe place that we can say, hey, this is what I'm going through. And as I said, the end of the day, it comes down to dignity. And at this time and age, I mean, not only do we see, yes, the world of journalism's changed so much, but I can't believe in this time and age how much disrespect I still see in the workforce, in life, toward women. And I find it not acceptable, and I think together we can work to make differences on that, because I think words matter, women matter, and we really have to stand up and support each other.
Michelle, thank you for the work that you're doing, and even as I listen to the intentionality behind the words as you speak them, I think that we can all sense your deep investment in wanting to make a difference, and that you are making a difference, and because of that vibration, you're continuing to be moved. Now, I know that I was at the women's table, and I know that the other 11 women that were there were individuals that I won't forget. And to be honest with you, even though Dietasia was the key person there, I felt like we all became one. And so my thought is to really explore your vision of the women's table in terms of having folks outside of the women's table participate to help to support this, to help it to grow. What are your thoughts about others coming in to help women's table grow and become a part of this narrative?
I feel that there's such an organic sense to it, and that I see two tracks. I would love to maintain our different women's tables around the country with smaller groups, because I think, as you saw, and your vibration helped us a lot, there was so much trust there. And while there were, say, per se, literally 12 women each time we've had it, each woman is so different, and each woman has such a larger sphere of influence. I mean, there we have Dr. Deborah Mash, the founder of the Miami Brain Bank, you know, one of the world's top neuroscientists. And what she's bringing to the world of trying to find answers to Alzheimer's and dementia, everyone came from their own world, and I feel that as we strengthen each other, we then go out and can touch more lives. So I like having the intimacy and trust, but at the next level, because I never want to close the door, and I have so many women saying, I want to partake in this, I think we can do a second track and have some larger meetings, which I'd love to kick off with you when you're visiting down here. Because I think also the tool that you brought to so many of the table, tapping into the words meditation, being present and being mindful, these are all super successful women who work at rapid speed, and I feel to stay fueled and healthy, we need to take this moment in time and also have these other work with us. And you were, you know, a destiny to be brought in. Well, basically, I knew you were coming to Miami, and I wasn't going to let you come here without us letting us honor you. So really, you helped, you know, move the destiny and flow so that we picked that date, because I wasn't letting you leave town without our women saying thank you for what you're doing and all the difference that you make in so many lives. So I think it will organically grow. I think, you know, we're on Facebook, and we invite so many people to join us, and maybe we can continue our conversation on your air so that we can bring women in this way. And I feel that as sisters, my sisters have been such a strength to me. And of course, as I watch you with your beautiful mother, who is such a leader, she's done so much. You're so lucky to have that relationship. It is the ultimate sisterhood between mother and daughter. And, you know, I had that with my mom, and I recently lost her in January. And, you know, my heart is, I don't even have words for it. But I was so lucky to have this amazing amazing woman in my life who my entire life said, do it, be whoever you want to be, never, ever held me back. And I feel that that's always the message that I would like to share. And I think that particularly in this time, also, like you touched on it before, the heavy vibrations in Washington and around the country. What can we do to tap into ourselves? Well, some of it also is for all those potential leaders out there, you know, to run for office. We need real leadership. Or if you run an organization, you know, believe in it, take it to the next level. Don't look the other way. It's easy to do that and throw our hands up, but I think we need to be an army of making change, and we can help that with each other. As you said, being present in the moment, I found in my life the best things I ever created, the moments I ever created, were when I sat quietly and said, all right, how do I fix this problem, or how do I tackle this? And then some wonderful, crazy ideas said, gee, I wonder, could we bring the top doctors in Miami over to Italy to study the soccer players who have Lou Gehrig's disease? And when you envision it, it's unbelievable the mountains you can move, right? And that's when the inspired moments, I think, come.
Yes. And so since we talked about that at the opening, you shared about the importance of the music, the meditation, and we have mentioned meditation in our conversations. Now I want to take you into a personal and pry into the heart and the soul of Michelle, because you've definitely shared your passion and what your soul is passionate about, definitely becoming a positive contribution in the world. Now, in your private moments, for you spiritually, emotionally, your quiet time, is there a particular technique or some things that you do to help you to turn deeper, to feel your essence, to feel God's essence, to power up, that you can share with our listeners?
Sure. Unequivocally, my day begins the right way when I can wake up and I have an area in my home that I consider my sacred space, where I have a lot of treasures that remind me of things. I have a gift that I received when I was in Oxford at the Brahmakumara University there that I was given. I even have pictures of Daddy there, Sister Jenti. The Brahmakumaras have been an amazing influence of teaching for me, of learning meditation. I'd also studied years ago for a time with the Kabbalah movement and learned some meditation there as well. I've kind of been, you know, like a vehicle or a vase taking in lessons from so many people. So I feel that when I begin my day with quietness, I visualize, I do a lot of guided meditations to myself, and I also absolutely honest about the fact that I listen to 100,000 angels every morning. And I tell people that because it is like flowing into a meditation. It's like a moving prayer. And, of course, the wonderful songs about wise women and all I find inspiring. But that makes a big difference in my life. It always has, being on the road. It's helped me in some huge, as you know, we talked about when I was flying in to interview Muammar Gaddafi one year in Libya after he'd given up weapons of mass destruction. And I tried to stay up all night studying, like facts, papers, documents. And I thought, I'm never going to have enough time to cue my brain up to be prepared to properly do the interview with him. Because one of the lessons in, you know, interviewing a dictator is you got to be on your game or it's going to end in 2 seconds. And it was so interesting, and a lot of people had fear flying. There were some fear flying in. And it turned out that the translator for his son had studied with the Brahmakumaris, and his sister, his beautiful sister Nadia, who lives in Milan, studies with the Brahmakumaris. And I was like, this is a good sign. And then the morning I was flying in, Daddy and Sister Jenti called me, and I didn't even have to ask a question, and because I had been wondering, what will I see in his eyes? And they said, Michelle, the question is, what will he see in your eyes?
In yours, yes. Amen to that. Don't you love that?
And then they basically, you know, suggested every hour, you know, pausing and connecting to God, to my God. I think that can work for so many people, whatever religion you are. But the point is that there's no question that going in and quiet has helped me so much in my life. And in my mom's, towards the end of her life, we worked so much. It was so sweet when she'd sit and say, Om Shanti, Om Shanti. To help her just relax. And then my niece, I have a niece and nephew. I mean, watching them begin meditating as children and running around the room happy, singing that, you know, that's the joy of it. And that's what I always remember of my time. You know, I entered this with a fantastic producer named Meredith Port, who basically brought me in to host a program on enlightenment. And that was one of our guests, and we had an amazing panel. But one was Sister Jenty. And boy, when she spoke, it wasn't the amount of words she spoke. It was what she said, the quality of what she said. And the room would just be quiet. It was an amazing TV show that went streamed globally. And then how lucky I was, like a month or two later, someone else who had helped produce the show, Adiba Ash, who was then involved with public television and the school here, she said, hey, they're having a world leadership retreat. What if we do a TV show? You're up. I'm like, I'm on the plane. And that's how I had the pleasure of going to Oxford and to do a story. And so I've, with meditation and that study, it's always been interesting that I've been able to do stories on it while learning it, you know? And that's what I always try to help other people tap into it. Because if you haven't had really special teachers in front of you, it's not always easy to know how to tap into it. But I know that once people learn, they don't give it up.
They won't, right. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing those stories as well, because I do know how impactful it is when you are with teachers that have been there, you know, way ahead of us, and we can trust their energy, their presence, and their vibrations. I want to talk to you about so many things, and we're going to definitely have to do a part two on this. But before I close, there was a recent report that you did called The Forgotten Floor. And it had, you remember that, it captured the horrific, inhumane condition of prisoners. But how some prisoners are actually being taught meditation and yoga. Now, you know, AG, you know, our Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, has increased incarceration penalties for even small crimes. And it's a little bit of a sad state because you're supposed to go into prison to kind of learn about what you did and to get out and to get another chance. And once you're in the system, it's so difficult to break away. So here meditation and yoga is going inside of these walls of people who are now another group of the forgotten.
That's
us a little bit about the story and the impact that this practice can have on this particular area.
Well, it was such a dramatic change here. When we first began investigating the ninth floor of the Miami-Dade jail for so long, and a judge had tried to get the story out, and there were, you know, investigations and state attorney's report, nothing ever changed it. And so he, thank God, opened his heart and said, let's get in there with a camera. You know, he suspected that the video would work, and he trusted me. And years of staying on it, I mean, the video shocked the community. It still took years and lawsuits and the Justice Department to finally, and sadly, my going back in, and every time I went in, I'd see a clue in front of me, and I'd say, wait a minute, why was that man in a wheelchair? To find out that he died the next day. And so, unfortunately, these very dark clues, but I would follow them, and those exposés brought so much public outrage. Finally, it was closed. And then a year later, I go to visit the new temporary, but the new facility for those suffering mental illness, and get to go to classes where some of them are now taking yoga and meditation. And this is like night and day. And because it's the practice itself, and I mean, the inmates were amazing in it, I thought. The big issue was, I respect you. I'm bringing you into this room, and we're going to talk about you and help you find your space. And I remember when we were going into film, and the amazing, amazing volunteer who does this, and I want to touch on that in a second, because these are all volunteers doing it. And the system's getting great credit. I mean, the system looked great in the piece that I did, you know, The Forgotten Floor, 1 year later, here's meditation and yoga. But I point out to the system, you're not putting $1 in it, and you should be. You know, shame on you that this is only happening because of a great group of volunteers. They need to live, too. This should be an institutionalized program. I really believe that. But I remember going in and saying to Lawrence Huff, who is this, you know, tremendous volunteer who believes that yoga can help some people really survive being in prison. I mean, it could be a matter of life and death. And I remember I said, what do you need? And he goes, boy, do we need new mats. We need new mats. We have really old, dirty mats. And so I said, I will talk to the yoga community and we will get mats, you know, donated. And that happened. So when I was following up to go in, I said, and I've got all these multicolored mats. And I remember at first he said, oh, no, we don't need multicolors. You know, just the dark is fine. And I said, you know, I got to think that multicolor will bring some kind of rainbow of light in that place, you know, with all due respect.
Mm-hmm.
And so we brought the new mats and we brought a whole group of them in multicolors. And I have to tell you, in particular, and perhaps sometimes because women are just more verbal, and when the female prisoners came in and we handed each of them a brand new mat. And they, because when was the last time a prisoner ever got something new? You're not considered valuable enough to have something new. And so they're just getting that mat. And then it not just being a dreary mat, it being pink or purple or green. Which color do you want? That, for me, was like magic. It was a treasure. It was, I'll never forget that moment. And it's all about really the act of respect. And
beautiful
they
story.
Practiced that day with respect. When they walked out of the room, they had smiles. Do I have chills when I see their hands go back into handcuffs? Yes. But maybe that moment really helped. And many of them, because they are inmates in jail, which means they're not convicted. I mean, many of them could be in there on false charges or walk free. So, I mean, we're also talking about people that are not even convicted of crimes. And so they certainly deserve that strength to help them to get out. And I just applaud the volunteers because, as I say all the time, okay, system, you're getting good credit for it. Put your money where your mouth is, because it should be there even beyond the volunteers, and the volunteers really should have some support. And anyone who ever wants to help with that, they can find me on my Facebook page, and I'll connect them right over to the nonprofit that's doing this, because I think it's phenomenal work. I think it's phenomenal work. I'm Michelle Gillen on Facebook. Yep, Michelle Gillen. Yep, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, Gillen, Michelle Gillen. And then also on Facebook, we have the Women's Table. You can find me through there. And, of course, my website, michellegillen.com. But either through Michelle Gillen on Facebook or the Women's Table is just perfect. And now, and we'll talk more about this, I know the next time, I have another project I'm working on called Brainstorm, which is also on Facebook, Brainstorm Miami, where I'm going to post every piece of the newest literature and efforts being done on the brain, including the impact of meditation, including searching for clues for Lou Gehrig's disease and this Alzheimer's that's affecting so many people. And the largest number are women, and the largest number of caretakers are women. And so we need to head this off. I mean, we need to fuel our brains and our bodies and be as healthy as long as possible.
Definitely. Michelle, it's been so rich to bask in your wisdom of experience. It's no doubt you've got just so much in you, and we thank you for that. Definitely, we want to have you back on the air, and so glad that we've got a mindful journalist existing on the planet.
And I'm convinced we met years ago here in Miami at the center or somewhere, but to meet you again in this chapter is just perfection. And
beautiful.
The Women's Table can't wait to have you back, and I know we're going to figure out a plan to have many, many women there, and it's going to be exciting.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much for joining us on the air today.
Thank you.
Take care. Many good wishes.
Bye-bye.
There's nothing more powerful, everyone, than to have someone of experience, the richness, the narrative, the amount of education. I mean, just to think about when life just keeps moving you and you're not going to give in. You're going to keep donating, offering, being of service, making it better. And so kudos to investigative reporter Michelle Gillen, author, a filmmaker, and a beautiful being that's doing a lot of good on up in our planet. So I'm going to end today's show with love and gratitude, because I think there's a lot going on, and we do want to be a little bit more grateful about what we've got and to be able to hold on to that. Please look forward for my new CD, Inclusion Revolution, coming out soon. So we'd love for you to be a participant in that experience. And remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission. And we are here to love each other the same. Here's love and gratitude from Kristen Hoffman. Take care, everyone.